till the people are prized.
And ain't lying, we just trying to get you elevated. That church is faking and Satan is getting celebrated.
Leave a part in your brain, we lost from the idiot box. The race to the bottom on your mark, but we too smart.
And we won't fall once the moment starts to snowball. No reverb too, who'll be on the roll call?
Please tell them.
The last nine administrations.
Using them Nazi strategies, caring for concentrations of population. And illegal wars on nations.
Now that's treason.
To bring global government in due season.
That's why they argue that a carbon tax is needed. But they told us that a revolution can't be defeated.
Boy, there's a light at the window. I can hear someone knocking on the door. There are voices in the street and the sound of running feet, and they whisper the word
evolution. Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, that dang old internet, man.
All listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
The Pacifica Radio Archive celebrates Black History Month by honoring the voices of a revolution. From the Montgomery bus boycott,
the decision is being hailed as a landmark for drunk fans, or as Justice Scalia wrote in the majority opinion, citizens who work long hours.
The program that the Black Panther Party has for the black community. If there's a functional link between the people and the People's Party, the Black Panther Party, then whenever the pigs decide to slide on in and move on the party or move on the breakfast program, people will say, hey, I don't understand all that rhetoric, socialism and communism those Panthers are talking about, but you keep your hands off that breakfast program because they're feeding my kids in the morning.
The Black Panther Party Breakfast Program Coordinator for Southern California, Jimmy Johnson, from 1970 on Pacifica Radio. The airwaves of Pacifica radio stations included some of the most important African-American thinkers, artists, poets, writers, speakers, and activists of the 20th century. To find out more, visit our website at pacificaradioarchives.org.
All right, and we are back at it. This is Michael T. Justice. This is Paragon Radio, and I got sidetracked trying to do more than one thing at a time. That was a good suicide. I enjoyed it very much. And I especially like being reminded of a clip or of a song that I haven't heard in a long time. And so we're going to listen to it if I can get this here computer to work with me. And it looks like we are.
Wake up, boys, there's a light at the window. I can hear someone knocking on the door. There are voices in the street and the sound of running feet, and they whisper the word
evolution.
There are men coming down from the valleys. There are tall ships lying off the coast, and they carry the light in the dark of the night, like a whisper in the wind.
Evolution.
Bring my gun and a handful of silver. By the sea we will gather for the fight. It's been so many years, so many tears, we have lost once before, now we'll settle the score, when our cannons will roar, revolution!
the land of the free. Has anything changed at home? Sweet liberty is in our hands. It's part of the plan, or is it a state of mind? Horses and men, horses and men are on the field. They didn't yield. Many have fallen here. Never forget. Never forget what they have done. The time will come when it will change again. Never forget.
And that was Chris DeBerg, The Revolution. And I don't know, I just love that song. I always get all freaked out or vibed out on my freedom loving ways and whatnot when I hear that song. So and I heard that in the Suicide and just had to hear it again, because it's been a long time since I know I used to play that for you guys, like, boy, 5, 6 years ago, 7, long time. Yeah, 9/11's coming up, and people start thinking about this stuff. So, again, great suicide. Phone number 816-931-5534. That is 931-KKFI. If you want to give a call and join the conversation, start a conversation. We were talking about a lot of stuff earlier in the evening. A lot of the same stuff that we talk about on this show, about how and where this society should go and how we should attend to it, because that is, in fact, the reality, right, that we have to attend to the runnings of our state, because that's how it starts, right? We, the people. Good morning, Big Dog. What's on your mind, sir?
Hey, bud. How's it going?
Not too bad.
How's your... Well, I'm not trying to put anything out there, but how are you doing physically? Everything getting better?
Oh, yeah. My whole foot problem, yeah. I was talking to Ben a little bit during the suicide there when we were closing out, or, you know, after we got went off the air. But we talk about the choices that we need to make and stuff. And this is why I'm always telling people on the air, too, that, you know, I'm a deeply flawed individual. I mean, I don't make the right choices. Because we were just talking about, you know, diet and health, and we were talking a little bit about that there at the end of the first part of the show. And, yeah, I make bad choices. So some of my problems are my own of my own doing. Probably most of my problems are of my own doing.
Yeah,
but thank you for asking.
Yeah.
It's getting better because I'm taking pills.
Yeah, I just recently got out of the hospital because I had a severe case of cellulitis in my right leg.
Wow.
And it stemmed, it stemmed from a...
Did you say cellulitis?
Uh-huh. It's like a skin infection.
Hmm.
And I got it from... I injured my toe out on the golf course, believe it or not, where I wore down a blister so bad on my big toe that it was covered the entire pad of my big toe, and somehow everything worked out to where I had this infection.
Wow.
Well, I have spent two times in the ER now getting some antibiotic drip to help fight it. And it's like, no matter how much you try to do the right thing, eat the right thing, diet, you know, get... I'm losing, you know, weight, and I put a little bit back on, lose a little bit, put a little bit back on, lose a little bit. You know, I've been, like, teetering.
Right.
But the point being is you know, when you're still eating, if you eat good, wholesome foods, nutritionally, that's better for you, right? And better than fast foods, obviously.
Right.
But we have a problem with our whole foods not being nutritionally sound, not because of... what you might call it, GMOs, but because the nutrients in the ground are no longer being regenerated, because I remember my grandfather, who was he lived in Ava, Missouri, was one of the corn farmers,
uh-huh.
And he had six plots
that he grew something else in.
I think it was 140. Hello.
Yeah, you were saying he had other plots that he, what, grew stuff in? Grew other
right,
stuff?
Right, he had six plots, I think it was 140 acres each, but he always let one rest every year, so he had a five-plot rotation.
Right.
And he'd let the ground rest. Man, that man had the most biggest, juiciest post in the years you've ever had. Oh, man. And it made such an impact on me, him teaching me a little bit about, you know, ground restoration when it comes to farming.
Right.
And it's an important part, but we don't do that. I haven't seen farmers do that. They grow it corporately, you know, for maximum yield and never giving the ground any type of rest.
Well, in large part, that's just our society as a whole, right? I mean, if you want to get all philosophical about it, I mean, that's what a Sabbath day of rest is supposed to be, right? Like a time to just not do anything and regenerate yourself.
Right. In fact, the Jewish tradition is Shabbat, which is the seventh day, but also the seventh year, you're supposed to take the whole year off and not do anything, not grow anything, because the sixth year you're supposed to store up. So you give the whole ground a whole year to rest. You get a whole year to rest, and at the end of that seventh year, all debt is wiped clean. And you start afresh.
I don't know if it's that seventh year. I think that's the seventh year, right? Because that's like every 50, 49 years, right? Which is seven sevens. But I mean, I don't want to quibble on that point. But yeah, the idea of Jubilee and debt and all of that stuff, man, there's something to me that sounds appealing to the whole idea of like just like that. Like it lay it fallow for a while so that it will become better.
Yeah.
Or it can do better when it gets back up and
definitely.
Going. I mean, I don't want to get into my health problems and stuff too, but yeah, but that's the same kind of deal is if you rest for a minute. But anything else on your mind, my friend?
Well, I wanted to ask you a question because I heard you guys talking about corporations. It kind of sounded to me like you were down on, you know, CEOs again and this, that, and the other thing. But I have to ask the question. Let's just follow me, for example, a person that owns a shop that employs, say, 20 people, okay? Wouldn't he be the owner and CEO, so to speak?
Yeah, I said earlier was not, I made the point more explicitly that when we talk about CEOs and stuff like that, we're talking about a range of people that are there. And, you know, because even in Ben's, what he was saying, you know, in the very statements that he was making, he was saying that, you know, there's these CEOs, these people who, you know, work hard, they figured, you know, they do the thing. But then there's these others who come in and it's like, okay, how is it that they make the company more profitable? Well, they siphon off profits here, they cut, you know, the quality of the product, they move things over here to offshore shipping ship the jobs off, right, to other countries and that kind of stuff. And that's a different thing, that there's a range there. So you can't just say CEOs. I mean, you don't want to use a blanket, you know, I'm having trouble with the phrase again. You don't want to use a blanket, you know, statement over all CEOs. So no one was making that point.
Okay. I was more or less trying to say, even though my example was going to lead to the CEO profiting more than what he, or the owner profiting more than what, say, the 20 people that he employs makes together in 1 year. Why would we, even if it might have been some shady practices that he had, why do we single him out and say, well, you know, blah, 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 about the CEO, he's done this, he drank,
right,
he's now shipping this
as
over here, or doing that. Whatever the case may be, streamlining the company, making it more profitable, whatever the case may be. But those 20 employees are still employed. Are we more concerned about that one CEO making just as much as those 20 employees in 1 year, or are we more concerned about that company staying solvent so those 20 people can stay employed?
I'm not sure that they have to be mutually exclusive.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think this is why is that so interesting? I mean, I don't think that you have to like do one or the other, right? I don't think that you can not talk about compensation and pay and how things are structured, and if it's not done the way it is done right now, then the company would not exist. That's a false, you know, dichotomy or a false, not dichotomy, but a false, you know, that's a straw man argument. I'm not saying shut the company down, you know what I mean? I'm not necessarily saying, well, he should make the same that those 20 people make. know what I mean? I think when we get into these conversations, when we have these discussions, and it's not about what I'm saying, you know, it's about what is ultimately done and what ultimately culturally, right, as a society, as a way of doing business, the way things are done, you know, the things that are considered, the things that are thought of as favorable or good business practices, those things, right, that is informed by our discussions. That's informed by our actions, right? If people do strikes and all this kind of stuff, it affects what the company's policies are going to be and whatnot. It does not necessarily mean that the company's going to go out of business. I mean, there are lots of companies that change their pay structures based on strikes, based on federal legislation, based on all sorts of things, and they survive. I mean, we still have a pretty good spot in the world, right, as far as the country being number one, right? I mean, you would agree with that, right? We have a pretty good way of life.
Yeah, I would say we have a pretty decent lead on.
And yet, at some point, in the last 50, 75, 100 years, we have made massive changes to the way that things are done and who is allowed to. You know, we've gone and told a private company that you have to let those people work 40 hours and you have to pay them more if they work more than 40 hours. We've gone in and said that you have to provide a safe working environment for them. And, you know, whether you how you feel about, like, say, smoking bans and things like that on job sites and in places, you know, we've made these changes and it has not sounded the death toll for the economy and for people.
Okay, so I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, so you're basically trying to say there could be legislation passed or something that that would restrict CEOs from making a certain amount of money?
I said nothing about making any legislation about CEOs. I'm saying that this country, in our work relations, right, over the last, I'll say, 100 years, But the way that things have gone, right, has undergone lots and lots of changes. And we have still maintained, we always maintain, we always come back. Because I've always felt, and I'm speaking strictly from the hip here, so it's not like some, don't try and hold me to some like, well, your thesis was, because I'm just set talking. And you know, it seems to me that we have always, you know, business has always continued to thrive in this country. People come up with ways to do what they need to do and to provide the services. And the, you know what I'm saying? It just happens. And when we stop for a moment, however we come to the point that we stop, whether it's, and this is what I said about legislation, whether it is legislation or strikes or, you know, what becomes accepted as good business practices, you know what I mean? We didn't have to necessarily have legislation to do everything that is done in businesses across the board now. You know what I'm saying? Things became noticed and talked about as good practices. And then people started doing, more and more people do those things, right? I mean, there was no law that there has to be a drive-thru on every corner, but people saw, hey, that drive-thru is doing well, so all of a sudden they're everywhere. I'm not saying that what happens has to be done by legislative, or there's many ways that things come into being, and this country has undergone lots of changes in the relationship of owners to workers, and in a lot of and lots of ways. Whether you're talking about race relations vis-a-vis the workplace, whether you're talking about sexual relations, whether you're talking about safety, whether you're talking about the length of the work week, and all of that was not legislated. Some of it was just adopted slowly, and then legislation came because there were still people who didn't make the changes. Do you understand what I'm saying? To say that when we talk about CEO pay, that the only solution is legislation. And I don't think anybody's making the case that the only way we're going to fix this is legislation. I think that's a straw man argument.
Well, then how can something like that come about? Obviously through some sort of regulation.
Not necessarily.
Right? I mean,
there are changes. People make changes based on what they see other people doing. Right? One company says, I'm going to provide these benefits, right? Look at something that was real popular. Uh-oh, I think I lost, I know what I did. And I don't know how to undo it. So, call me back. I think that was Miles. Now I'm sidetracked in what I was talking about. I'm sorry. When you look at the
benefits and whatnot,
right? Benefits and whatnot. One of the things that was real popular, especially like through the 90s and through the beginning of the 2000s, was the notion that companies would reimburse you for
going to school.
And somebody's got to turn their phone down. And Big Dog, it looks like we got another call coming in as well. Oh, all right. Oh, I've got a speaker on. There we go. This thing is driving me nuts. We're going through this.
I hear you talking through this again. Really bad.
All right, I'm not going to try and keep two calls going, so
I'll close out here so you can get the guy on. But I'm trying to come to some sort of clarification because
I think you got to just pay.
The CEOs are doing something against the law. I don't see why we should, you know.
Have any kind of discussion or conversation about it whatsoever?
No, not at all, Mike. I'm talking about having this disdain towards CEOs that didn't do anything against the law, but seemed a little bit out of place because they make $5 million, and the board of trustees or whatever that voted to hire this guy, they voted also on his salary.
Right.
And I don't
we made that exact point earlier in the night,
right.
And I encourage you to listen a little closer because no one was saying that. In fact, they explicitly stated the exact opposite, that there are indeed cases where, hey, nobody's saying. I think to paraphrase what Ben said, I'm not saying if the guy's making $1 billion and he's doing what it takes to make that money, nobody cares if he's making that money. It's when they're doing these other things. So you say even then we shouldn't be concerned with it? And you say even then, and what I'm hearing you say is that even then we shouldn't be concerned about that or no.
If you're breaking the law and you get caught,
right.
That's why we
But
have
if it's shy of breaking the law, then
process,
we don't need to make
you know?
Those judgments.
I mean,
well, let me let this other call get in because he's going to get frustrated because I already hung up on him once.
All right.
Thank you, sir. All right. Let me see if I can do this again for you, sir, and get you on this time. Be the right one. KKFI, you're on the air. What's your name? What part are you calling from? Tell me, I got you. Miles, are you there? I guess not. I renounce myself. 40 lashes with a wet noodle. So, that's where it is. I had said I was going to try and play this thing earlier this evening, and I've got it here. I think this is the one I'm having telephonic problems, so I'm not able to use my phone, so I think this is the same little piece that I wanted to share with you, but it's about, this is this guy that somebody turned me on to and said, hey, you need to hear what he's talking about, and this is a guy talking about white privilege and where the whole racial class or divisions come from in their inception. Let's try this one more time. KKFI, you're on the air. What's your name? What part of town are you calling from?
Yeah, this is Miles from Independence.
Miles, how are you, sir? It's good to talk to you.
Pretty good. Hey, sorry about all the phone problems.
No, it's me.
No. It's something going on with my phone. It seems like every time you try to transfer me, the reception on my cell phone end, I could hear it breaking up. I could hear you talking in between the break, you know.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Well, cool. Well, what's on your mind while we got a bit of a connection?
Okay. First of all, I called last week and debunked most of what Big Dog said about the CEOs. You know, just because something is technically legal doesn't make it right, you know.
Right.
You could be a hateful person to a lot of people in this world legally. That doesn't make it the right thing to do.
Right. And my whole point is that when we have these discussions and when people make hay out of it, that's when it begins to change. It doesn't change. It clearly doesn't change when there is no light brought to it, when there is no discussion about it, when there is no protest or angst about it, because then it's just business as normal. And in fact, what happens is it grows and spreads.
Well, and then people look at that
and go like, hey, he's making lots of money doing that. I'm going to try that too. Until at some point, we the people, not necessarily, although there is that option, and it does happen that legislatively we act, but we also act by boycotting places. We also act by, refusing to work, you know, under these conditions. And
I think the bigger issue to me is the issue of corporate chartership.
Right.
I don't think a corporation has a legal right to exist. Like Ben said earlier, you know, when a corporation's a person, I'll believe it when Texas executes one.
Right. And I got into this a little bit with Russ earlier too. The whole question of, you know, does the corporate charter have to be, you know, does a corporation have, or in order to be chartered as a corporation, it used to be that you had to show some public good, right?
Well, not only that, but, you know, to me, when I see this debate between conservatives and others, a lot of times the comparison is made between a corporation and an average citizen. And, you know,
there's so many differences that,
you know, when you apply these restrictions to a corporation, and a CEO has to make decisions on whether or not the corporation can exist or not, you know, isn't this the same argument that conservatives and Republicans have against, you know, welfare moms? You know, they have to make the decisions they have to make to exist. They have to make the decisions they make. You know, what's wrong with, you know, evening the, you know, I'm not for wealth redistribution, don't get me wrong, but having somewhat of an even playing field. You know, when there's a certain level in which you could have so much money in the bank that you're accruing interest at such an exponential level that you and a whole army of people could not possibly spend that much money in your lifetime.
Right.
In your children's lifetime, in your grandchildren's lifetime, being able to make that amount of money in a single day, to me, you know, granted, I know that's not the majority of CEOs out there, but don't get me wrong, we've created an institution in which that poison is possible in our society. Not only possible, but then it gets encouraged, and then it becomes exponential.
Well, see, and I would argue, too, that you muddy the waters a little bit when you try to mix the two, right? Because what happens is you start talking about, you know, the Jeff Skillings / Ken Lays of the world, right? Who are sitting in rooms going like, ha ha, we're gonna create a situation where the lights go out and then we'll be able to charge them more for the lights and they're doing this kind of thing. And those guys are sitting there and you see those guys. But then when we try to argue against that, what you certainly don't want to do is bring that down. Hold on a second, Miles. What you certainly don't want to do is bring that down to, well, now, wait a second. If you're going to talk about that, now, what about the guy who gets up every morning at 4 o'clock and goes in and fires up the machinery and has works 20-hour days to make his corporation, you know, become this and that? It's like those are different people. And we're not saying all CEOs. We're not saying, you know, we're talking about a specific set of bad actors within a range of CEOs.
Well, actually, you know, I'm trying to talk about something a little more broad. The reason I brought up a corporate chartership is it's not all CEOs that are bad, but we have an institution that allows for such a widespread of bad charactership.
Right.
And the reason I say that is, sorry, you'll have to excuse me, I'm a lot of breath.
The corporate chartership
allows you to take the responsibility off of your own personal life. You don't have to be attached to what you are financially invested into. You know, you don't have to take as much responsibility for this entity once you've thrown your cash at it. Granted, that's the CEO's job to take responsibility. But, you know, really, we've created this on-paper monster.
Right. I was just going to say, like, a kind of almost like a Frankenstein. It's like, it's not alive, but it's animated.
Yes.
It is moving. And it is doing things.
And the role of the CEO is to make those investors happy. And those investors have no other motivation but to make money. You know, they may be, you know, swayed by public opinion about rights violations and labor issues. And, you know, they may have an understanding that these issues might cost them money in the long run. But, you know, the difference between a corporation and a small business is that corporate chartership. And I don't want the government to come after the small businesses. You know, the whole concept of investing in a business is to have that personal responsibility, to have that attachment. That's why you invest in a small business. But what goes on in Wall Street, trading stock in corporations, and, it, you know, it's all a gambling numbers game. There's no responsibility involved. And to me, that's what makes it bad. You know, I could go on and on and on about CEOs, and granted, you know, they are a key component to this. But really, the issue is the corporate chartership. They are what enable the bad CEOs. So, you know, we're having this whole discussion about, you know, are CEOs bad or not? No, the whole system's bad.
Well, see, but then I'm going to let it stand with that, Miles, because I do got another call to come through here, and I got a couple things I want to play, too. But boy, I don't want to say the whole thing is bad, because there are values to being able – uh-oh, I lost him. I don't want to say that the whole thing is bad, because there are values to working corporately, right, cooperatively together. And that is a particular manifestation of that cooperation, but nevertheless – KKFI, you're on the air. What's your name? What part of town are you calling from?
Hey, Mike from Riverside.
Okay.
CEO talk yet again. Awesome. I mean, you mentioned that range of CEOs. It's like you say cost-cutting CEOs are the bad ones.
I'm not trying to get into, like, defining them. I'm saying that when people are talking about CEOs and bad actors, there's a whole range of people that are out there that we're talking about. And it's the same way I don't want to just say all white people or all women. I don't want to say, excuse me, all CEOs. I'm about to choke to death here. So that's where I'm at when I'm talking.
Yeah, and I mean, I can appreciate your differentiation between the CEO that built the business and the one that comes in. And I mean, there is a difference. I agree with you. But, you know, I mean, one-to-one costs, cut costs, others have to cut costs, you know, and it's in the same way.
Right, and that's where Miles gets into, and I don't know that I would go as extreme, or even if he is as extreme as his words may sound, that you just, like, would totally undo the whole system of corporate charters or of, you know, allowing people to bring monies together. Because when I think of this, I think of there may be something that I want to do or can do, but I just don't have the funds to do it, and there's no way I'm going to get the funds other than to get a little from you and a little from him and a little from him and a little from her and a little from her and him and be able to put that together and do that. I don't want to undo that type of cooperative action, but I do think that And I think everybody's on board that there's got to be some sort of governance. It's always a question of what particular you want to govern and how you want to do it. And I think the problem is that we often get into scorched earth kind of discussions, like, you know, all CEOs are bad, or, you know, just totally do away with unions and this and that kind of stuff. That, because I would disagree with you on your interpretations of some of those things too, but again, can't get into it all because got other stuff to do. But I'm sorry, your response, sir.
Well, I would just like to point out that one way, I guess, the tax and regulation of corporation crowd, one thing these people do is increase the difficulty or basically decrease the ability of entering the industry as a supplier. You know, I mean, one thing that the tax and regulation crowd does is essentially support every established business out there and stand in the way of any new business coming in. I think that's an important factor to point out, because the tax and regulation crowd, I mean, they're the biggest supporters by default, without even knowing it, of these big corporations, and I would say even CEO salaries being as big as they are, because these regulations especially, but taxes as well, increase costs and therefore prices, making it harder to profit, and, you know, that's one element about increasing or making it difficult to profit is that you can have fewer suppliers. So the established suppliers benefit from the government getting in the way. I don't know if I'm making that clear. It's just one element of whether you want to. I understand what you mean when you want to regulate and tax these corporations. Well, let's just say regulate. You want to regulate these corporations. Well, that does increase the cost automatically right there, and therefore it is more difficult to exist, because once costs go up, their prices go up, and then, you know, as prices go up, quantity demand goes down, all that stuff. So the regulatory crowd, like Miles, they're essentially the biggest supporters, without even knowing it, of big established businesses. And if there were no regulations at all, or very minimal regulations, then even more suppliers could enter the marketplace, and then you know, where the supply of CEOs remains the same, the demand, the demand, since you would be increasing the number of businesses or suppliers, you would be increasing the need for CEOs where the supply remains the same, so it would drive down the cost of CEOs, number one. Number two, if you really want to drive down the cost of CEOs, you just want to increase the number of CEOs available. You know, what I would do, I mean, if your goal was to diminish CEO compensation, I would just have a CEO school popping out CEO. We just want to vastly increase the supply of CEO potential.
Right. I don't think that ultimately that is what is the goal. I don't think that – and, Miles, you're back in there. Are you with us, sir?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I have not – interpreted what has been said across the board is like the goal is to limit CEO compensation, but more.
No, but we all pay CEO compensation every time we buy something, so we're involved, you know. And I can't imagine. I bet all of us agree that we don't want to pay CEOs as much as they're getting paid, you know, because we're paying for it, you know. So anything to decrease the cost of these people to us is a good thing. And by having a very, very small amount of regulation so that as many suppliers can enter the marketplace as possible, that's the best situation for us, because then you have more positions for CEOs. And so, you know, essentially, supply of jobs for CEOs the supply of CEOs remains the same, that would drive down the cost of them. But the thing that kills me about this, trying to yank corporate chartership based on how Miles feels about an industry, I mean, if Congress engaged in that, you know, we'd all be starving to death in a decade. If they could yank any business, if they could prevent any business from existing based on how someone feels, and solely
well, based
on that.
I don't think that.
Denver,
see well, here's the problem, Mike.
You don't know what's going to happen. Maybe
when you make arguments,
deals, you know,
when you make arguments
about your corporation, and
okay, Mike,
yours.
All right, Mike. I was attempting
to. You misquoted me three times, man.
Let's let Miles respond to that because I'm concerned that that's how you are arguing is like these false dichotomies. But Miles, go ahead.
Yeah, you've misquoted me three times. At no time did I ever say I wanted regulation. At no time did I ever say I wanted to limit CEO pay. And as far as corporate charterships expiring, that's the way it used to work. That's the way it worked for 200 years in this country.
You want to yank them.
No, I never said
wait
yank
a minute,
them.
Mike,
I said let them expire.
Mike,
you did.
Mike,
I said let them expire.
Mike,
yes.
Could you respond to what he's saying rather than like your interpretation of what he's saying? Because it's kind of like I was saying with Big Dog earlier. Is like I'm not the two can exist two ideas can exist in a yin and yang sort of existence without them being like it must be obliterated. I've not heard him say that we need to yank charters, but rather. Well, I'll let you speak for yourself, Miles.
Like I said, give them a 20-year life cycle, let them expire. Now, on the other points you've made, like I said, I'm not for regulation and I'm not for limiting CEO pay, but I do have a rebuttal for the things you said against those types of things. You know, when you say it would make it harder for these corporations to exist, well, you know, that is exactly. You know, the type of thinking that conservatives put on the rest of society when they say, well, you know, when times are tough, you just need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You know, innovation and dedication doesn't happen when you're given a silver spoon. It happens during the hard times, during the rough times. And unfortunately, we're going to be facing those whether we do regulation or not.
Innovation happens all the time. But good economy, bad economy. Innovation happens all the time.
Well, okay.
You know,
yes.
Again,
innovation happens all the time.
In fact, I would say that what the richer a society gets, the more innovation you have. So I would say there would be more innovation in better times than worse. But I wasn't saying that you were saying anything about limiting CEO pay there, Miles. But I have a hard time believing that you're anti-regulation. Frankly.
Well, I am anti-regulation. In fact,
what regulation
like I said,
has he suggested
feel,
other than feel, this quite, this issue of charter? I what regulations have you heard him talk about wanting to impose?
Well, I mean, just the fact that he wants the ability to, by the back door, yank a business's ability to operate.
Okay, but he didn't. Okay, all right, Mike. I'm gonna both of you. Actually, I'm gonna let you go because I've got a. Get some stuff ready for the next section here, but
all right, have a good night.
All right, thank you, sir.
Miles, my point is real quick.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, now like I said, I was going to let the corporate charterships expire, but the way it used to work in this country, the corporate chartership is actually a contract between the government and the corporation, allowing the corporation to exist and therefore become a person. So to me, that's the regulation involved. I'm for free markets. I'm for people doing free business. You don't need a contract. You don't need a corporate chartership to do that. Let it expire. Thank you.
And yes, okay. Thanks, sir. And I would ask because you're not here to ask, Mike, but to prep yourself for next week or for people to just ruminate on is this notion that the corporate charter, as Miles was talking about, is again that's that way for people to come together and to do whatever, and if that charter expires, then you reapply for the charter. It's not a way of yanking the business from itself when you talk about corporate charters. Now, there are many different ideas out there, and I think it's helpful to argue against the ones that the person you're talking with is actually arguing about, because it's kind of hard. If you say something and then I just kind of go like, well, what you really mean is and what you really want to do is, because if that is what you really want to do, then that's great for me to argue against that. But if it's not, we're really not going to get anywhere. I'm going to try this.
Let's go,
wrong one. Sorry about that. Let me turn that off so that it doesn't do that again. But I am going to have to burn my way out of here. Not going to get to do the Tim Wise thing. I'll do that later because I wanted to do this because this will flow better for me. So good night, Kansas City. I will see you next week. This has been the Paragon Radio Show. And you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Lee Camp, and this is your moment of clarity. As many of you know, the Republican Party, a fully owned subsidiary of Koch Brothers Industry, has decided that their number one goal is to knock the knees out from under your average working man by destroying collective bargaining, pensions, health care, and unions in general. Luckily, Obama and the Democrats have stood up to this attack with the strength of an arthritic jellyfish. When I'm arguing with someone about unions and explaining that we need strong, healthy unions to have a high standard of living in this country, I'm always amazed that the person says, well, they slow down companies and make them unable to compete globally, so all the jobs go overseas. But don't you understand what goes on overseas in China and Indonesia and Bangladesh and other countries that 60% of Americans think are foods? Don't you understand what goes on over? Haven't you heard? It's workers crammed so tight they're sitting on each other's laps working 20-hour shifts. If you lose a hand in the machine, the company doesn't stop the machine. They just announce that one lucky customer will find a wedding ring or a wristwatch in their instant baba ganoush. Bathroom breaks are a privilege awarded to those workers who have been with the factory over 3 years and lost not more than one appendage, your eyeball. There is no maternity leave. There is no daycare. But they don't need daycare because you can watch your toddler yourself, seeing as he's working on the machine right next to you. Sexual harassment is frowned upon, except on special harassment days, which are held the first Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday of every week. You're paid 10 cents per hour, but don't go on a shopping spree just yet. You owe the company 5 cents per hour to rent the spot where you work and 1 cent per hour tip for the honor of working there. Point is, it's not a pleasant existence, and you, who claim to be pro-American, who wave the red, white, and blue when you so much as take us, you want America to red, white, and you want us to quote-unquote be competitive with that? I think we should run as far as possible from that, like there's a rabid Kelly Ripa behind you, or a Kathy Griffin on three espressos seeking your approval, or an Arnold Schwarzenegger who thinks you have the antidote to paternity tests. We should run from this version of America you've envisioned, in which workers have no rights, cereal boxes have wristwatches inside, Triscuit boxes have wrists inside, and employee lunchrooms are sparkling clean because lunch isn't allowed. Being competitive sounds so wonderful, but there's another option, being better than, and that can be measured by workers' rights. During World War II, we could have been competitive with Hitler and seen how many Jews we could round up and how much of Canada we could invade and how silly a mustache we could have grown. And some people probably would have argued that if we weren't competitive with Germany, then all the good Jew-catching jobs would move overseas. But luckily, instead, we decided to be better than Germany and we created our own American Jew-catching jobs. Wait, that's not right, but you get the point. Let's be better than the sweatshops overseas rather than trying to become them. I'm Lee Camp, and this is your moment of clarity. Get more of these at leecamp.net.
We got no plans, no plans at all. Evil man's always transcending. Fight her like sheep, swallow everything. Always simpletons or pretending. We got no plans.
You are listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Hi, I'm Larry J. For the best in classic Southern soul, check me out Thursday mornings, 10 o'clock until 12 noon. But don't touch that dial. You listen to Mother's Mix with Lady D. It's all about that love thing, baby.
you remember the green grass of Ochre Park Sunday afternoons? The hardwood floors of the Cowtown Ballroom? The red brick walls of the Vanguard Coffee House? The metal roof of Parody Hall in a rainstorm? Yeah, I've been looking for you. I'm RJ, host of the Friday Morning Buzz, inviting you to turn on, tune in, and trip out with me every Friday morning from 6 to 8 a.m. and only on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You're listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
Modern-day sharecroppers on wheels will rally in Los Angeles in a Teamster effort to organize port drivers. Doug Cunningham reports.
The Teamsters, port workers, and supporters will rally in Los Angeles August 27th in the drive to organize port truck drivers. Nick Weiner is Port's campaign director with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. He says the union has had some success at the ports, and drivers misclassified as independent contractors are fed up with pay and conditions and are more interested than ever in joining the Teamsters.
They're fed up. They're the modern-day sharecroppers just on wheels. Now drivers are taking notice at other companies. So what's happening in a couple weeks is a big rally in L.A., and leading the way are drivers at this company called Green Fleet. And some of their big customers are like Skechers Shoes and Huffy Bikes. They're coming together. They want to be treated fairly. And so we're going to have a big rally on the 27th.
Weiner says while conditions in overseas sweatshops are often horrific, much of the supply chain of imports is here on U.S. soil. So he says the Teamsters are focusing on helping workers here improve their conditions.
And there's jobs here that can't be outsourced, that can't be shipped overseas, that should be good, decent jobs. So that's what we're trying to do.
In less than 2 months, individuals will be able to start shopping for health insurance on marketplaces created under the Affordable Care Act. Wisconsin is one of the states that has chosen to forego setting up a state-specific exchange and instead is allowing the federal government to step in and do it. The Walker administration is expected to release information regarding health insurance rates by the end of the month. MIT economist Jonathan Gruber said in a conference call on Friday that when the rates are released, it's important to also factor in tax credits intended to reduce the cost.
By my estimate, the post-tax credit price falls by about 5 or 6% in the state. And after you account for tax credits, the price in this market falls. Now, there are some winners and some losers. And the losers are essentially the people who have benefited from existing discrimination in this market. Wisconsin has a highly discriminatory non-group market where young, healthy people can get excellent rates and older, sicker people are excluded and have to go to the high-risk pool where they pay expensive rates that are subsidized by the state. So it's not surprising that you end up with some losers. Anytime you end discrimination, the group that benefits from that discrimination will be worse off. That's the idea of ending discrimination, is to benefit the people who have been discriminated against.
Nearly half of the consumers expected to buy into the...